Hi there, and welcome to this episode of the Total Spellar podcast. We are delighted to be joined by a real legend of our sport today, a three-time Olympic champion and now the chairman of World Aquatics Technical Water Polo Committee. We're thrilled to be joined by Dr. Tamás Molnár. Welcome, Tamás. How are you?
I'm fine. Hello, everybody. Everything is fine. We are at the end of the important tournament. 10 long days, last games, the most important ones. I'm really excited.
We're going to split the podcast into two. We're going to start by talking about you and your playing career first, and then we'll talk about your role as the chair of the TWPC in the second part. But talking about your playing career, you were born and raised in Szeged. What can you tell us about your early days of playing water polo, how you got into the sport?
I was eight, if I remember well, when I always say that for an advice of a doctor, I started to swim. But after a very short time, I realized swimming is not for me. I was not really attracted. And at one day, suddenly, a water polo coach came to recruit kids for water polo. And I said, okay, I'm interested. I joined water polo. And at a sudden, I realized I love it. I attend all the training session. I could count in one hand how many times I missed a training session. And it turned out I like it. I liked it. Still like it. Actually love it. And after a while, it turned out that I'm not hopeless. Probably I have some talent. And I started to step up on the stairs and reach where I reached.
I understand you played. You did a bit of judo when you were younger, and you said maybe swimming wasn't for you. If you like judo and you're good at fighting, and maybe you're not the best swimmer, being a centre forward is, as I'll tell you, is the perfect combination. You said you fell in love with the sport and you were dedicated and you went to all those training sessions. Do you remember a time when you were younger when you realised I'm going to be professional and maybe represent my country?
Probably it was always in my mind, in my dreams, but I had to go step by step because if you step bigger, probably you can fall. That's why when I was 16, I started to dream about playing for the first division team one day. Parallel, I started to dream to join the age groups national team in Hungary. And it happened when I was 17. After I won everything with the age groups national teams to 92, 94 and 95 with Hungary. After when I was 20, I was picked by the adults. Hungarian national team only for one single game, and after the Olympic Games in Atlanta, Hungarian national team got a new coach, Dénes Kemeny, who got legendary since that time. And that moment I could feel it's very good for me personally, and we can continue what we have done before with the juniors.
Yeah, we'll talk about what Dénes and your golden generation achieved in a minute, but you had a particularly good playing career in Hungary. Maybe your best times were with Honved. You also played at Dubrovnik for one season and then in Serbia. As a Hungarian going and playing in a foreign league, Hungarians have everything they need in Hungary. So to go and play in a foreign league, what did you learn? What did that add and what impact did that have on your playing career?
That time, before the Olympic Games in Sydney, almost everybody played abroad. Only one player who was in the Olympic team played in Hungary. And I think it was a big part of our success. When you are abroad, doesn't matter how good you are, doesn't matter how good friendship you have with your teammates, with your managers in the team, you will be always a foreigner. If something goes wrong, you will be the first one who are pointed as the reason of the failure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very big pressure on you, a very big responsibility, and you have to prove every training session, day by day, every game, week by week, that you deserve the rank, your contract, your money, and it's a very, very big motivation because you would like to be... You would like to prove every day that you deserve to be there.
Obviously, you and others have gained kind of legendary status, and we can't talk to you about your playing career without talking about the golden generation and those successes with the national team, those three Olympic gold medals. And other successes as well. The Hungarian national team basically won a medal or two medals every year from about 2000 to 2008, and you and maybe four or five others were at the core of that. Deniz Kameni comes in 1997. What kind of impact does he have when he joins the team?
The very first moment we could feel that he changed a lot. It turned out on the very first tournament that, okay, we had six, seven new players, but his strategy was not to make the core from the previous generation, to make the core of the team from the younger generation and put the former generation around this core. And it was a very big step forward.
Mm-hmm. And that generation, that overhaul and the new blood, did you believe that you could go on to achieve the sort of things that you did?
Probably at the beginning they had some doubt, but at the very first moment we won the European Championships in Sevilla '97 with an amazing play, and that moment proved them that we can make together the last step on every tournament, because they were always there but never on the top.
Mm-hmm. And to win the second gold and then the third gold, maybe we'll start with the second gold. How special was that to prove that it wasn't just a fluke the first time you did it, and then again in Beijing to win it a third time, that it was something really special?
Hey, it's a really nice feeling when I have to speak about this. First of all, the first one was fulfilling a dream. If I would say which one is the most important, the first one is the most important. The second one, it's completely unique. We played in Athens, birthplace of Olympic Games. In Greece, we had an amazing tournament. We won all of our games in a very difficult group. We won the final from a hopeless situation against Serbia and Montenegro. And we played a crazy last session, which is, I think, legendary in the history of water polo. And the last one is special because my sons, twin boys, were born in 2005, and they were three, and I think they already could understand something what was going, and they witnessed at least something from my important part of my career.
Yeah, it's nice that they were maybe there and maybe remember a little bit. You spoke about that final in Athens against Serbia and Montenegro, a legendary game, maybe arguably the greatest game of all time. What was it like playing in that? What was it like that last quarter? And what did Deniz say to you maybe just before the end of that last quarter? Did he give any like a amazing team talk or what was it like?
In the important moment, I was always alone. So when I was there, I could hear what he was speaking about, but it didn't change my mind. So I was focusing only on myself. The information I got that he said we could do it, but the most important thing is not to get any goals, because we can score two or three, but if we get one to score more, it's very difficult. And if we can do not to get, we can manage.
And you did, of course. And maybe there was an opportunity for you to play in London. Maybe not. Did you feel that your hunger to play that fourth Olympics wasn't quite there?
I decided before Beijing that I would stop after the Olympic Games. So yeah, it was not even a question in me that I wanted to continue. In the first year, when I was in Rome on the World Championships and I watched a water polo game from the stand first after 14 years with the national team, it was very strange. But after a while, the next tournament, I didn't miss it at all. I believed I took my time. I reached everything I could. And when you have three Olympic golds, your approach a bit different. And we had really talented upcoming center forwards with a lot of motivation. I didn't want to take just because of my reputation, the place from them. And I didn't want to compete with the young, more hungry lions.
Yes, yes.
And that's why I think, and I still believe, it was a good decision. And I like to hear the stories when they speak, oh, if you had been there, how it would have, okay. I was not there, so nobody can answer this question. But it's a really nice compliment.
You won everything, really, as a player. Were there any setbacks for you? Do you have any regrets, things that still bug you to this day that you maybe wish you'd maybe won an extra in the Champions League or something like that?
We had a lot of chances. When I played for Honved, we played for Champions League final after each other, and unfortunately we won only one. I played for the Championships final, and we won only one. I don't say something is missing, but looking back, the first one was very painful in Perth when we lost after Sevilla and after the good start. And at that moment, I thought that it won't happen again, that I would have a chance in the future to play in a World Championships final again. But it happened and we succeed, so no complaint, no regret at all.
Do you think that setback in Perth was maybe crucial to the success of the team? Or do you think you would have been successful maybe even if you had won that final?
It's conditional, it's theoretical, difficult to speak, and we don't know what would have happened.
Yes, it's just because lots of us look at this golden generation that you were part of, and to win three Olympic golds is amazing. It's every water polo player's dream. But were there any setbacks for the team? We all view it from the outside as this team was just the best. They won everything. But as someone that was there and part of it, were there any lows where you guys maybe thought you weren't going to ever achieve what you wanted to achieve?
When you start to play, you start to dream about being a member of a national team. And of course, probably we set a standard for the next generation a bit higher, because everybody probably would like to be an Olympic champion. But it's a very long road, and you have very little probability to reach to the top and succeed. Not three times, even one time. You have to have very good set of stars.
Yeah.
To have all just once. And we managed three times, and we couldn't believe after the second. And I don't know what we thought after the third. But it belongs to our normal routine. Probably in the normal routine, we don't even think, we don't appreciate what we achieved. But in this kind of situation, when I look back and we start to speak, and I can hear people how they speak about the achievement we did, it makes us emotional, and it's a really, really special thing.
I imagine. Just two questions before we move on and talk about things after you were playing. Was there a club that you got the opportunity to play for that you never did? Was there a team that you regret maybe not playing for, maybe in Italy or Spain or somewhere like this?
Yeah, of course. When I was younger, I was always dreaming to play in Rome. Rome was at the time one of my favorite cities, and I wanted to play there. And when I went to play for Hugh in 1999, and during the season they called, but by that time the team was not that good. And happened what happened, that after 1 year in Croatia and 1 year in Serbia, I went back to Hungary. So I didn't play abroad at all afterwards. And probably it would have been good to play in Italy, because it's a different experience. I don't say I regret, but this is probably what is missing.
It would have been nice. What one last question before we move on? You only ever celebrated scoring one goal, really, I think, and that was in that was in Sydney. Why didn't you like celebrating scoring goals, and how did it feel when you did finally let that emotion out at the Olympics?
Yeah, I know it's coming from your colleague. I don't know why. Probably your colleague, my friend, told me that please celebrate, because I would like to take a good picture. And I celebrated once, and after I reviewed, and I didn't like what I saw.
It just isn't part of your character to...
No, it's
to,
not.
No, okay. Fine, okay. We'll move on then and talk about after your playing career. You retired, and obviously you're involved now with Szeged, your boyhood club, and you've stayed in the sport, and you have involvement with World Aquatics and Len. But you actually started to referee. What was that like? Did it give you a new perspective on the game, and maybe gave you a little bit more sympathy for the referees when you were playing?
First of all, I started refereeing because I wanted to be here in this position. And that was the first step for that position. I wanted to learn water polo from the other side as well. Referees, especially from the better coaches, better players, were always criticized. I wanted to show that don't criticize, come and show how to do. And I think in Hungary, I also give some example for some of the players, because Raymond Fodor also started to be a referee, mm-hmm. and some other younger players also started. That for my side, even if you were a top player, it's not a shame to be a referee, because it's a completely different role, and even the best experts knows in a relaxed situation what should be called. But when you are there and the whistle in your mouth and the responsibility is yours, and you have 1/10 seconds to decide in a situation which is 50-50, this is difficult.
Yeah, very, very difficult. And you said something interesting there. You said you wanted to be the referee because you wanted to be where you are now. And what? Why is that? What made you want to be in the position that you're in now as the chair of the Town of Water Polo Committee?
My mentor, let's say mentor, Ferenc Salamon, who was a member of LEN and that time FINA, now World Aquatics, technical committee member. And he asked me once when we were together that what is my plan after the sport. And he told me, start to think, probably it's a good idea to step on this way. But if you choose this way, the fastest you can get into the technical committees, if you start with refereeing.
Okay. And obviously you are now the chair of the World Aquatics. It is now a technical committee. Some of our viewers might not be fully aware what that job actually is. So maybe can you be really clear to them what your role is and what your responsibilities are?
Technical committee is responsible for all activities in water polo in World Aquatics. World Aquatics has, this moment, Olympic Games, World Championship, World Cup, and Age Groups World Championship. And we have to set all the necessary rules, regulations to appoint the officials, to control the tournaments, to analyze statistics, and try to navigate water polo in the way where, how it can be better for the future.
There are a few problems with water polo, I think it's fair to say. And I think we'll start with one big one. And we've had questions from people sending messages to us. And frankly, we don't know how to answer them. And we hope that maybe you can. And let's just start maybe with the calendar and the schedule of water polo. It's not ideal. Do you know what the calendar looks like over the next year for 2024?
We are working on it, of course. There is a lot things which is not that for the next season. We had pandemic, we have postponed the championships, we had extraordinary championships. We had a lot of things which changed everything. And it's a really extraordinary year, the next one, because actually, let's say within a year, in World Aquatics, we have an Olympic Games and two World Championships. Never happened before, and we hope it will never happen again, but we have to deal what we have. We have to find the balance in between the interest of the clubs, of the national teams, of the continents, of the international federation, federations, continental, World Aquatics, and to create the best outcome, which is acceptable for everybody. It cannot be good. It can be acceptable.
Yes. Okay. As you said, there's the likelihood of an Olympic Games, two World Championships within a year, but also there's going to be a European Championships, and there's rumored that it will be moved to January, in which case there will be a European Championships and maybe not more than a month later, a World Championships, which is hugely problematic. As soon as the players have finished preparing, their intensity, they can't rest, they can't really prepare for the next one. That's a big problem, and how can that be allowed to happen?
It's not an ideal one, for sure, but from all the aspects, I think it's still a better scenario than the ordinary was, that the European Championships in October. Because if it's October, the two big tournaments, European Championships and the World Championships in Doha, would cut the season for three parts. And now they are almost together. The national teams can get ready with only one preparation together. It's not still ideal, but we have more space, more time for the clubs, because the clubs gives contract for the players, and without a proper club season, nationally and internationally, what interest they have. And now we can find the balance, and probably this extraordinary year we'll navigate water polo, because we can try new things, new competition system, can navigate water polo into a better direction after the Olympic Games in Paris. And our main goal, because you said it's problematic that sometimes we don't know the schedule, the organizer of a tournament just a very short time before the event, and we would like to set a full four-year calendar, World Aquatics and LAN together for 4 years till the Olympic Games in Los Angeles. It would be a big achievement. I hope by the end of this year we can provide this.
And that would be great for everyone. Everyone would know, and it's great that you've said that, and we would love that too. There's also been some other problems recently. I mean, we're here in Zagreb for the World Cup, where two teams were drawn in the same group with two different hosts. So Croatia and Montenegro were both drawn in the same group, and then they were changed. Can you maybe clear up what happened there, and how that can happen?
We started with the setup of the World Cup a bit late, because we started to operate in the middle of the summer. We had three ongoing competitions, no, actually five, the women, men under 18 and women, men under 16. And we had to finish the previous edition of World League. And actually, we could focus on the project only from the beginning of September. And when we had approval for everything, the time was passing, and we had probable organizers, but unfortunately, after the draw, they went into one group. And it happened that we didn't have organizer for one of the groups. And we had a very short time, and even France, Italy, wanted to organize, but the given time was not good for them. That's why, by the end of the day, we had two organizers, Montenegro and Croatia, in the same group. And this was the only way to manage the situation, that we changed Croatia with Greece in the groups, and Greece and Croatia was in the same line in the group. So that's why I think the philosophy of the draw was not hurt. And as an outcome, you can see what is going. And I would say I like to see what we have as a First Division World Cup tournament, even here in Podgorica, very high level games, very motivated teams. I think it's never happened before, and I think it's one step forward on the way we would like to go. And I would say, so far as I can see, it's a big success.
Yeah, okay. For clubs to attend tournaments, it costs a lot of money for clubs and federations and nations to host tournaments. It costs a lot more money. And Waterpolo isn't in a position where it has the luxury of having lots and lots of money. So all these competitions, who does it benefit if countries and nations and federations are having to spend a lot of money paying for the so many different tournaments over this period?
It's a problem. You are right, and we have to work. We are working on it as well, and it's not only technical level. It's not about the rules, not about the referees, not about the activity in the water. Of course, it's linked to the swimming pool, which capacity is determined, and sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's humid. But we have to create a product which is interesting for the people. Today, with the social media, probably it's much more easier. But everybody have to understand that we have to invest. It's not possible that we is waiting for each other to do. Everybody has to invest, and this is the only way.
Well, you spoke about the product of water polo, and I know as your role with the technical, you're not necessarily involved in all the stuff outside of the pool, but the product at the moment of water polo, what are your views on it? I know that there's been rule changes, and the rule changes have been designed maybe to make the game more interesting, but is that the rationale behind the recent rule changes? Do you think they are making the game a more appealing prospect?
Probably it's one of the reasons, but as I mentioned before, it's not a key question. We would like to create a product from technical side, which can be enjoyable, understandable, and we would like to work transparently, because there is no secret. We would like to involve everybody in the technical level, coaches, players, referees, delegates. Everybody has to know everybody, and if we don't have secrets, there will be no critics, because it's a sport, and unfortunately somebody has to lose, and the loser always have to find some reason why they lost. And if everything is clear in advance.
There's two things you said there. I'll pick up on the first one. To make the sport maybe more enjoyable to watch, there was a game the other day between Croatia and the USA where there were 20 goals in the game, but there were something like 41 exclusions. Is that the kind of game that World Aquatics wants to see? Or do you want to see more goals, or do you want to see less goals? Or what's the viewpoint, and what's the approach there?
From my side, if we have more goals, it's better. But it's my single opinion. It doesn't really change anything. And it happens that there are more exclusions. Somebody doesn't like it. I don't say the teams don't like it, but from technical side, the referee has to follow what is written in the rule and have to apply what is written in the rule. And if we would like to have less exclusions, the coaches, the players, has to react. Okay, if it's exclusion, so I shouldn't do it. But if I do it, it will be still exclusion. From referee's side, to reduce the number of exclusion, it's very dangerous because we will have a product which we won't like it by the end of the day because it will be too physical, wrestling. It's really not enjoyable like it was 10 years ago.
And you spoke about things being understandable. We've got a few questions on this, but water polo, on average, has a whistle every four or five seconds compared to some other sports who have a whistle. Football maybe is up to a minute and a half and such. For people that follow water polo, sometimes the whistles are confusing. So there probably isn't much hope for new people coming into the sport to try and understand what's going on. Do you think that's a problem that needs to be addressed?
Yeah, you are probably right. That's why I always emphasize from technical side. We are ready to work with anybody who is telling us about the conditions we have to fulfill to have a better product. From technical side, I cannot see any obstacle to cooperate with anybody.
Good. Just on a new kind of addition to the sport, VAR. And water polo isn't the only one. There's a lot of sports that are having a few problems with VAR. But a big problem at the moment is viewers at home don't know necessarily what VAR is looking at, and they can't see it on their screens when they're watching the broadcasts or the streams. When do you think World Aquatics will make that available in your tournaments for viewers at home to watch the VAR?
I think it's already happened because you could see the outcome of VAR in a World Aquatics event last year in Tenerife in the Women World League Superfinal. Unfortunately, the technical side is not always provided. We are open and we have the equipment, but sometimes I don't want to investigate why we cannot provide the signal to the screen. But we are ready for it, and we would like to do it on every competition. And if we have everything provided, we will do it.
The important thing is that you want it to be available because it's important for people at home to understand what's going on.
Yeah, and for the transparency as well, because we have no secrets. Everybody can come and see what we are doing.
It's good. The idea of challenges for coaches has been floated, and I actually believe it was, as you mentioned, at World League in Tenerife, I think it was piloted. What's your opinion on that? How are things going, and when will that be a common thing in our sport?
We tested, and we continue testing in Bucharest, Romania, 20 under the championship this year as well. In Tenerife, we had 24 games. Not 20 games. And we provided one and one challenge for the coaches without any consequences, just to see how it goes, how often they ask, what is the feedbacks from their side. And tell you the truth, it happened only 3 times. So from my side, it's not a big deal to provide them. And there, when we give the responsibility for the coaches, even the, for example, just to mention Carlos Silip, who was one of the greatest players, as a coach, he said, I'm probably not sure we need this. It's your job, decide. Don't put any pressure on us to cooperate with you.
Yeah, he wants you to make the decision.
But from my side, from technical side, I think if it will be well supported from all the stakeholders, we can start after the Olympic Games.
On the World League in Tenerife, there was an incident where I think there was a violent action called, and then I think there was a challenge, and it was the violent action was actually overturned. But for us watching at home, we didn't really know what happened. We just assumed the referee had the challenge had been made and the referee had overturned it, but it wasn't really clear. Lots of federations in other sports sometimes have their technical committees come out after a weekend or a game, and they say during the game this happened and this was the incident and this was the outcome. Is that something that you think could be applied to water polo? Could you come out and say, okay, during this game, this person was found to have committed a violent action and that's why they were excluded or that's why that happened?
First of all, we have to have regulations and we have to work according to the rules and regulation. And the problem was in Tenerife, to explain it shortly, something happened. Everybody could see. Who understood? I could see immediately it was a violent action. Referee asked a VAR review, and at the same moment the coach asked a VAR review as well, which saved our integrity, because that moment to review that it's brutality or not, it was not part of the VAR protocol. So the coach asked a challenge which saved us, because that moment the referee had right to review. And of course I couldn't go there because Hungary was playing, but it took a bit longer, should have. And the final outcome was, because the final decision is in the hand of the referee, the final decision was made by the referee that is what it was not violent action, it was just misconduct. And she came back and he announced that it was misconduct, which means exclusion with substitution. It means red card, practically. And that was the moment when I interfered and I told the delegate, call back the referee, because according to the protocol, if you review a VAR situation, you can decide it's brutality or not. If you say it's not brutality, you cannot make another decision.
Yeah.
So that's why it was strange that first she excluded with the red card, after when she had the information from the delegate, she went back and announced that player is not excluded. So that's why if we have a regulation, we have to follow the regulation, even if we don't like it.
Yeah, it all comes down to procedure. You can't just make things up. And that's really clear. And I think what maybe my question was saying, and I think what lots of people feel is, if after a game, at the end of a match day or a tournament, someone from the technical committee can come and make an announcement and write exactly what happened, just how you'd explain it to me, make it a lot more transparent. And I think that's something that you guys want to achieve.
I don't know how it can be done, but as I said, if it's interesting for the media, we are open for this. To speak after every game without interest, it's not good. If you have question, I think we are open to answer that question.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. As a former player watching, and as a player here, not with your technical committee hat on, watching the games, do you think that the game itself, the product, the spectacle is better than it was 15 years ago?
I'm 100% convinced. The refereeing much more understandable. It's not that physical. We would like to create spaces for the more technical, more brilliant players, because lately you cannot see any brilliant skill you could see before. And now we would like to give opportunity for the players who have the skills to show us what they can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. And what's the future for our sport from your side, from the Technical Water Polo Committee side? And I know you mentioned there that you want to create a schedule for 4 years in advance, and I think that would everyone supports that. But in terms of other projects that you and World Aquatics have got going on, can you maybe give us a little sneak peek into some of the work that you're potentially doing for the future?
Yes. As we have discussed, the main goal is to provide a 4-year calendar in between the two Olympic Games. And we came out with a new edition of competition system for under 20, 20 under, which means we will have more teams, 20, but in a completely new competition system, which will provide more games in between the teams who are closer to each other in quality. We will eliminate the games as much as possible with big goal difference. That's why we don't humiliate anybody, because it was sometimes a big discussion. They don't want to come because to lose with 20 goals, it's not a big motivation from Croatia, Italy, Hungary. And the competition system is still open to win to everybody, because even who is on the bottom, start from the bottom, by the end of the day, by the end of the competition, can reach at the top. Most probably it won't happen, but yeah, the opportunity is there. And on the top, it will create more fair outcome, because you are not that draw dependent, that if you have a good draw, probably you can go to the semifinals without any difficulties. The best teams, the 8 best teams from the previous edition of the Age Group World Championship will be playing against each other in 2 groups. So all the best teams, even in the group phase, will have 3 difficult games, and it will create more balanced outcome.
More competitive. Okay. Just one last question before we leave you. There's been a lot of change at World Aquatics, but are you optimistic that the organization and, from your point of view, the technical staff is heading in the right direction?
I wouldn't be doing this if I don't believe. Of course, we have to work. We have to work a lot. We have to analyze, and we have to listen for people, not only from water polo. Because as you can see, some of the sports, handball, for example, which was very close to water polo 10, 15, 20 years ago, and now they are far in front of us. And it's a good example that it can be done, and we have to do it.
Good, good. Well, thank you, Tamás. We'll leave it there. Thank you for answering all of our questions honestly, and it's been really informative, and it's been an honor talking to you. And I just want to thank you guys as well for tuning into this episode of the Total Water Polo Podcast. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Tamás Molnár. Just before you go, just a reminder that you're entitled to a 10% discount at Where Water Polo by heading over to wherewaterpolo.com and entering the discount code podcast10 at the checkout for 10% off. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing, reviewing, and rating our show wherever you get this podcast. And make sure you follow us on social media to stay up to date with all the latest water polo news. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Total Water Polo Podcast.